From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has agreed with some of her Democratic colleagues that the United States is in the midst of a constitutional crisis, with President Donald Trump and the White House throwing up roadblocks at every turn as lawmakers attempt to hold the president accountable. Protected by his loyal Attorney General William Barr, Federal Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and even the two Supreme Court appointees Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, Trump has skillfully engineered a situation that protects him from the checks and balances built into our system. Still, the subpoena of Donald Trump Jr. by Senate Republican Richard Burr, who heads the Intelligence Committee, suggests there may be cracks in the firewall of Trump's support. Many have pointed out that Trump's resistance to subpoenas mirrors what President Richard Nixon's administration engaged in ahead of his resignation over the Watergate scandal. Additionally, it was in part the crumbling of Nixon's Republican supporters that had led to his downfall. We turn now to Aaron Sherb, Director of Legislative Affairs at Common Cause. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
So first, let's talk about this idea that we are in a constitutional crisis. Gerald Nadler, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, said that. Nancy Pelosi echoed his sentiment. Would you agree?
Well, I think we're certainly in an unprecedented moment where the president is viewing the Supreme Court and is viewing Congress not as co-equal branches of government, but of subsidiaries of the Trump administration, and expects Congress and the Supreme Court and the judicial system to kind of bow to his every whim. And so that's it's an extremely scary situation, probably unprecedented in American history. And, you know, hopefully with the Democratic House will prevail and be able to do the constitutionally required oversight that they are attempting to.
There's many things to discuss, and I want to start with the issue of the special counsel's report and the special counsel potentially testifying. Earlier this week, the Attorney General essentially requested President Trump to exert executive privilege over the entire special counsel's report and all the underlying evidence that Congress wants. Some have said that it's too late, that they basically waived away their rights. What do you make of this assertion of executive privilege?
Well, it's the whole executive privilege is supposed to be utilized to protect kind of privileged conversations between the president and other administration officials. I think the interpretation that Attorney General Barr and President Trump and others in his administration are trying to use executive privilege for are far beyond the bounds that we've ever seen in American history for any administration invoking executive privilege. And some of it's just not applicable. For example, Donald Trump Jr., who, as you mentioned today, or this week, has been subpoenaed by the Senate Intelligence Committee, Republican-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee. The actions when the time period in question was before President Trump was present, it was during the campaign, so they clearly cannot exert executive privilege there. Plus, Donald Trump Jr. is not an executive branch employee, so it just does not apply to them. So really, they're trying to distort and abuse the executive privilege power for something something that we've never seen before.
Does Congress have any recourse on this issue? Does a Trump's declaration, does a president's declaration of executive privilege mean that Congress cannot actually access the unredacted report, which is what they're trying to get? They have subpoenaed for the report. They want the underlying evidence. And now with this executive privilege, is that the end of the road, or are they going to sue to get it?
Well, I think Congress has a couple options at its disposal. So one, we saw the beginnings of those this week with the House Judiciary Committee holding Attorney General Barr in contempt for not turning over the underlying evidence and some of the other information behind the grand jury and other Mueller report information.
And also failing to testify, right?
Yes. Yeah. They obviously want Attorney General Barr to testify. And I think the most important part that they're trying to get is all the underlying information behind the Mueller report and the grand jury information. And so Congress can attempt to hold Attorney General Barr in contempt and to try to get a court to declare that he is in contempt of Congress and either start fining Attorney General Barr or I think it's been talked about him potentially being jailed. That would be quite unprecedented to, but that's certainly an option under a kind of a law or a certain precedent for that, and that I think was last invoked in the 1930s. And so those are two options that Congress has as well. Separately, there's not as much talk of this, but just using the Congress can use the appropriations process to try to reduce funding or cut funding to the Attorney General's office or to the Department of Justice if they're not complying, or other agencies if they're not complying with the with certain subpoenas or document
And of
requests. And
course, that
so
would require the compliance or the, that would require the Senate, Republican-controlled Senate, to actually agree with them, which is probably not going to happen. Then there's also, of course, the issue of Special Counsel Robert Mueller himself testifying. This is something that Congress has wanted and that several House committees want. And there was a tentative date of mid-May set up for that. It's not clear what's going to happen. And now we're hearing that President Trump has said it's up to Attorney General William Barr to allow that testimony or not. I suppose Trump feels confident that Barr's looking out for him.
Yeah, so Robert Mueller is still a Department of Justice employee, and so technically the Department of Justice can try to block or exert executive privilege over Robert Mueller to try to prevent him from testifying. I think if once he leaves stops being a Department of Justice employee, then he has much more flexibility in trying to schedule potential testimony with the House Judiciary Committee or other committees. And so I think the timeline. Yeah, I think he'll certainly be able to testify before Congress. It's just not exactly clear when that would happen. I know there've been some, May 15th has been floated as a possibility. I think it's probably more likely the following week or later, but I think he'll definitely testify at some point.
If Mueller were to resign, he could be free to testify.
Yes, and so, yeah, he's very much a letter of the law type guy, and so I think he might he'll have more kind of flexibility, or he won't. Attorney General Barr will not be able to block him, block Robert Mueller from testifying if he's not a Department of Justice employee.
Let's switch gears now and talk about the issue of Trump's tax returns, his taxes. There's a lot to discuss there. And of course, the big concern about a president like Trump is that, unlike the claim that he is making that he's just being targeted because he's a successful businessman, there's a legitimate concern that he has used or is using the office of the presidency for personal financial gain, right? And that's, I understand, the reasoning behind House Ways and Means Committee Chair Richard Neal wanting to access the last 6 years of Trump's federal tax returns from the IRS. So it seems like there's a legitimate legislative concern, but Steven Mnuchin has said, no, there isn't.
Well, first of all, it's not for Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to decide if there's a legitimate legislative concern or not. There's a 1924 law that clearly states that the House Ways and Means Committee Chair or the Senate Finance Chair can request the tax returns of Americans for private review by those committees. And most recently, the Republican-led House did that back in 2014. And so President Obama's Treasury Department did not protest or did not obstruct justice like the current administration is doing. And so there's clearly a precedent. This law has been used before. And so we expect Secretary Mnuchin to comply with the law and follow the letter and spirit of the law in turning over President Trump's tax returns for review. And I think, House Ways and Means Committee Chair Neal is. They're already preparing litigation to try to enforce the law since the Treasury Secretary is not complying with the law to this point.
So their lawsuit would compel Mnuchin to turn over the returns or what, face jail time? Because of course we know that if a court does rule in favor of the House Ways and Means Committee chair, it's very likely that Mnuchin would still defy any kind of court order. And then again, it seems as though the Trump loyalists are essentially daring Congress to arrest them.
Yeah, I think arrest would probably be the kind of the most extreme possibility, but I think that there's certainly
But they are
civil
extreme people, right?
civil
It
law.
seems like they will stop at nothing.
Yeah, I think, but if this ultimately could take months, if not years, to be resolved. So I think that's the Trump administration just wants to try to draw it out and keep stretching these out as long as possible because they know that lawsuits take an extended period of time to get resolved. And so I think just continue to put public pressure on the Trump administration and using the appropriations process or otherwise to try to put pressure on them is probably the best shorter term solution.
So, of course, to deal with or as a workaround to Mnuchin's loyalty to the president, the state of New York has decided to that it's important enough for congressional oversight authority to be respected that they have state senators in New York just passed a bill called the Trust Act that would allow their tax commissioner to turn over state tax returns to the heads of committee chairs. Apparently, that those tax returns would contain roughly the same sort of information that federal tax returns could. Could this work?
I think it's certainly a possibility. I think we're seeing a number of states consider somewhat similar legislation or legislation that would block President Trump from being on the ballot in 2020 if he didn't publicly release his tax returns. I think there's New York and California, they're probably two most hope high profile states that are considering this legislation so far. I think it's certainly a good step to require that disclosure. I think there would be presumably lawsuits from the Trump administration or from the Trump organization or other people connected with the Trump administration who try to block that from happening, and so that would potentially get wound up in the courts as well. But I think it's certainly a kind of a good another step in to consider.
Right, but the state of New York has essentially now given authority to congressional committee chairs of several committees to simply request the state returns from the state, Trump's tax re state returns from the state. And of course, New York being Trump's home state, he presumably has had to file state taxes there. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Andrew Cuomo's said that he will sign that bill into law. So there's then and New York's Attorney General Letitia James is a formidable person where Trump is concerned. She has made promised to hold him accountable.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It seems likely that the New York House will pass that legislation and Governor Cuomo will presumably sign that. And so I think, it'll be interesting to see if the Trump administration has a lawsuit ready to try to block enforcement of that.
And then we, of course, in the midst of all of this, had the New York Times expose of this huge investigative piece based on tax information that they obtained of Trump's federal taxes. I understand it wasn't actually tax returns, but tax information of 10 years of Trump's business dealings, 1985 to 1994. And they showed that he claimed losses of $1.17 billion, the largest for any single individual in several years. What do you make of President Trump's response to that? He, of course, dismissed it at fa as fake news, but then also contradicted himself, implying that it was true and that it was something that all real estate developers did to claim these very large losses. And he said it was sport. I mean, I can't believe that we have a president who literally says such things out loud.
Yes, well, it's certainly these 10 years of his tax returns or copies of certain tax returns certainly go against the kind of the message he ran on this campaign of being a successful real estate mogul and developer and job creator. And in fact, he was losing over $1 billion over this 10-year period. That certainly calls into question whether or not it was actually his father that was giving him some of this money, funneling it to him illegally or otherwise. And so, I think this is yet another reason why we have to get President Trump's more recent tax returns, not only to see any conflicts of interest that he has or any other if he obtained money illegally or from his father or where some of this money came from, but also to see if he's benefit continues to benefit from the Trump Hotel and from his various businesses, how much he's benefiting from Mar-a-Lago and other his many other business entities around the country and around the world. And so it's this these 10 years of tax returns from 1985, 1994 certainly call into question or really kind of catalyze the need for seeing more recent tax returns of his.
Right, exactly. I mean, so right there is very clear basis for a Congress's legislative oversight need. And that reasoning that Steven Mnuchin claims that Richard Neal doesn't have to see Trump's tax returns. But of course, every step of the way, we have this protective wall that Trump seems to have built around him, as I was mentioning earlier, all of these figures, not just in the Trump administration, but he stacked the courts with the help, of course, of Mitch McConnell. We've had these court appointees being confirmed at a breakneck speed by the Republican-dominated Senate. And of course, Trump got to appoint two Supreme Court justices, one of which many argue was essentially stolen from the hands of President Barack Obama. So the question becomes, if all of these avenues of oversight end up stymied in courts, couldn't Trump essentially benefit from loyalists that or people who feel loyal to him that he is appointed in courts? I mean, it just feels like our system is broken, and every step of the way, he has outdone the Constitution and constitutional protections and checks and balances.
Well, I think President Trump certainly feels that he's trying to stack favorable people who'll be favorable to him on not only the Supreme Court, but also at other levels of courts. However, many cases that the Trump administration has filed or is part of, I think they're showing, they've been overruled or ruled against in more than a quarter of those cases, or I'm sorry, in more than 50% of those cases, and a quarter of those have been with Trump appointed judges. And so I think we're still seeing, there's still a strong independent streak within the judiciary, and some of these cases that might end up at the Supreme Court, or as we're already seeing with the census citizenship question case, and others, it'll come down to most likely being a 5-4 decision in some of them. And so hopefully Chief Justice Roberts, who has expressed strong, deep concerns about preserving the independence of the court, probably a lot of this will rest on Justice Roberts being the kind of the ultimate arbiter in many of these cases.
Wow.
But some of the lower courts, though, even Trump-appointed judges are ruling against him, from the Muslim travel ban to environmental cases.
Right. So does it seem as though there is any sense of discord within the GOP around protecting Trump? Because honestly, if you look back on history, as I mentioned, Richard Nixon's Republican support began crumbling at some point. I guess it got to be too much at some point. It's not clear what Republicans' limits will be to what they'll tolerate in terms of the abuse of our system. But does Richard Burr's action to subpoena Donald Trump Jr. indicate some cracks in the facade? His colleagues are really upset with him, and they're very vocal about how upset they are. Senator Rand Paul said, he didn't get the memo from McConnell about case closed.
Yeah, I think to be determined. I think since Senator Burr is not running for re-election and already announced that, he's somewhat liberated to do what to put country over party and to do what he feels is best. And he and Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, have a strong working relationship. And I think of all the congressional committees that have done investigations, the Senate Intelligence Committee has been the most bipartisan, and they have the most kind of agreement and collegial relationship between the chair and the ranking member. So I think that's certainly a good sign. So I think only time will tell. But until until Fox News, let's say, turns on President Trump and some of his base supporters, until that percentage of supporters among Republican base voters drops below, say, 85% to 80% or below, I think members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, will very much feel a primary challenge or worry about primary challenges. And I think Senator Tom Tillis from North Carolina, who is up for re-election in 2020, just got a primary challenge as well this week. And so he had expressed some kind of hesitation or expressed some concerns about President Trump's, some of his obstruction of justice and executive actions. And so I think the fact that Senator Tillis now has a primary challenger will make Republicans in Congress that much less likely to be independent and speak out against him.
Some have suggested that one of the main ways, or perhaps the most effective ways, for the Democrats to compel a respect for the Constitution is to rally public support, is to, you know, make, you know, refuse to move on, as Mitch McConnell and Trump would like them to do, and to rally the public on this issue in such a way that it becomes an embarrassment for the Republicans to continue to support Trump. That, you know, public, the court of public opinion might be our most effective and potentially our last avenue for some movement on these issues. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that was certainly what proved effective with some of the Watergate hearings in the 1970s. Yeah, I think the fact that Fox News wasn't around in the 1970s, if it were, it might have yielded a much different result than what we had. But there's such tribalism now, there's such polarization that it's hard to see until kind of Fox News and some of the some percentage of Trump-based voters start to turn on him. It's hard to see Republicans in Congress really shifting dramatically, but. Yeah, I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, so I'm the eternal optimist. So hopefully we'll see some progress in the near future. But it seems the Republicans still seem fairly unified against the Mueller report and proceeding on anything other than that.
So finally, Aaron, what does your organization Common Cause recommend needs to happen now? I mean, you know, grassroots efforts. Can yield great results, but we're talking about the levers of government. We're talking about elected officials making decisions either to do the right thing or choosing to do the wrong thing. And it feels as though there's a sense of helplessness for the rest of us outside of government. Are there actions that Common Cause is recommending that people can take, or that even that Common Cause is directly engaged in?
Yeah, well, on our website, commoncause.org, we have several petitions that are remain active. I think the most important thing is just to continue to contact one's members of Congress, especially if they're Republican members of Congress, to encourage them to hold the Trump administration accountable, to stop obstructing justice, to make sure that that the administration is complying with document requests, is complying with subpoenas, is upholding the rule of law. So I think that's one thing that's most important. But yeah, as well, just trying to continue to encourage members of the public to elevate and lift, you know, talk about these issues, write letters to the editor, post on opinion forums, post on social media to try to get more people thinking, talking about these issues, not just in kind of quote unquote blue areas, but around the country, because I think so much of the problem is that because Fox News has a very specific kind of certain agenda that they're pushing, it's hard to get lots of other Americans to even recognize or see that some of the worst abuses of power and obstruction of justice that are being committed by the Trump administration. So I think just trying to elevate and like lift up some of these stories and create that bottom-up pressure will eventually create, hopefully create enough momentum or provide enough cover to Republican members of Congress to take action, because privately many of them get it and are extremely frustrated at the Trump administration.
Some progressives feel that focusing on all of this is a huge distraction. What do you think?
Well, I think for this matters much, it is much bigger than just Donald Trump. This is much more about the kind of long-term prospects of American democracy. And so I think, look, it's not an either-or situation. Congress can continue to focus on lowering prescription drug prices, solving our broken immigration system, trying to pass common sense gun safety laws at the same time that these investigations and ongoing oversight are continuing. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Well, Aaron, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest has been Aaron Sherb, Director of Legislative Affairs at Common Cause. We've been discussing the constitutional crisis the country is facing and what can be done about it. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.